Hello, welcome to the debate on Press TV. This is coming your way from our Tehran headquarters. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Tehran has announced it will initiate the second phase of scaling down its commitments to the nuclear deal on Sunday. That's when the country's 60-day deadline for the European signatories to the JCPOA expires. Now, this in response to the EU powers not fulfilling their commitments within the nuclear deal and the U.S. withdrawal and reimposing sanctions on Iran. We'll discuss various aspects of the issue after watching a report.
The Iranian president renewed his criticism of the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal for failing to fulfill their commitments in the face of the U.S. withdrawal from the internationally recognized accord. Hassan Rouhani warned that Tehran will increase its uranium enrichment beyond the 3.67% at the end of a 60-day deadline it had set for the other side to comply with the agreement.
We will take the next step as of July the 7th. If you want to express any regret, do it now. If you want to make a statement, make it now. Iran's uranium enrichment level will not be at 3.67%. We will abandon this commitment. We will enrich uranium at whatever level we need and we want.
Rouhani also said unless the remaining signatories comply with their commitments, Iran will start to resume its previous activities in the Arak heavy water reactor after July 7th.
Regarding the Arak nuclear reactor, it will return to its previous activities if you do not fulfill your commitments under the agreement. The reactor will return to the point where you said could be dangerous and produce plutonium, unless you fully respect your promises.
The Iranian president stressed that the Islamic Republic will reverse its measures as soon as the other side meets its obligations. On Monday, Iran also announced that the country's stockpile of low-enriched uranium has exceeded the 300-kilogram limit set by the JCPOA. The European signatories to the deal, namely the UK, France and Germany, have expressed concern over Tehran's move, while the US accused Iran of violating the accord. Iran has already rejected the U.S. claims, saying such measures are in line with certain paragraphs of the nuclear deal.
What we have done is exactly based on paragraph 26 and paragraph 36 of the nuclear deal, which allow Iran, in the face of U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear deal, it allows us to cut short our commitments, certain commitments.
On May 8th, Iran started to scale back its commitments under the deal. As the first step, it decided to stop transferring its extra stockpiles of enriched uranium and heavy water out of the country. At that time, Iran also warned that it would take a second step after 2 months if the remaining signatories failed to meet its key demands, including the lifting of US sanctions on oil exports and banking system. Last week, Britain, France and Germany launched a long-awaited mechanism for financial transactions with Iran called INSTEX as part of their efforts to salvage the deal. But Iran says that's not enough and the EU needs to do more. Tehran has reiterated that the mechanism will not be useful if it does not include oil sales or provide substantial credit facilities. The Trump administration has intensified pressure on Iran since it abandoned the nuclear accord in May 2018, with the aim to bring the Islamic Republic to the negotiation table over its regional influence and nuclear program. But Iran has time and again stressed that it will not hold talks with the U.S. under sanctions and threats.
Now let's start our program. But joining me on this program will be Robert Fantina, who is an author and activist, as well as journalist from Kitchener, and Riyad Karim, director of the Veritas Center for Strategic Studies, who is joining us out of London. Good to see you both, gentlemen. Let's begin with Robert. Iran has fully complied with the JCPOA, as endorsed by the IAEA for 15 times. It even kept adhering to the deal 13 months after Washington pulled out of it and reimposed sanctions. The EU side of the deal has not acted as per the provisions of the deal that they call a landmark one and the result of marathon talks and diplomacy. Now, what keeps European powers from implementing the deal instead of telling Tehran to remain in it without benefiting from it?
Which is a move that makes no sense whatsoever. Iran was promised certain benefits and is not getting them, so Iran is not obligated to maintain its part of the agreement. It's not obligated to remain compliant. the European countries are not fulfilling their obligations because they've been bullied by the United States. They've given into that bullying. The United States government has said that it will sanction them if they continue to trade and deal with Iran. So rather than standing up to the United States, they have simply buckled under and said, okay, we will violate the agreement. And then in the same breath, they're saying, but we don't expect Iran to violate it. So what each party to the agreement, except Iran, expects is that Iran is the only party that will be in compliance. This makes no sense. The European leaders who are showing concern, as the quotes say, that Iran is not compliant, need to look at themselves. They have been out of compliance for over a year now, since the US withdrew and threatened them. So if they want the deal to remain in effect, they need to keep their part of the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Now, Riad Karim, President Trump has told Fox News that, I'm quoting him, we cannot let Iran have nuclear weapons, and that certain other countries cannot have nukes either. It's too devastating, end of quote. Of course, Iran is not after nukes, but a question is, if the U.S. is in a position to decide which country should and which country shouldn't have devastating weapons. Iran didn't launch an atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the U.S. did.
That's correct, and the fact of the matter is that they are not in a position to tell Iran what to do and what not to do. They've pulled out of the JCPOA, remember? You know, and they still think that they can pull the strings and do whatever they wish to do and get the world to basically bow down to whatever sanctions they pose on Iran, which is completely wrong, because number one, Iran is a sovereign country. Number two, Iran is not as volatile as North Korea is. What did he just say about North Korea a few days ago? Is that, you know, there's a possibility that they would agree that North Korea become a nuclear power. You know, and so how do you choose who to give this power to and who you don't give it to? My question is that who made you the world's police, or rather who died and made you God? Because I'm sorry, but you know, once you pull out of the JCPOA, you have absolutely and utterly no say in what Iran does and doesn't do, and that includes the sanctions, which I think are illegal.
Okay, now let me ask Robert. President Trump is also saying that the Iranian economy is in shambles, and this will force them to come to the negotiating table. Now, more interestingly, he's calling the so-called maximum pressure campaign of his administration as diplomacy, and complains, together with Brian Hook, that Iran does not respond diplomacy with diplomacy, and that they are playing with fire. Nice joke, isn't it?
It's hilarious, actually. The fact that he is calling sanctions diplomacy, he equates anything other than bombing with diplomacy. Sanctions are cruel, brutal, as your other speaker mentioned, probably illegal under international law. They cause untold suffering, but that's okay with the United States. You may recall that a couple of decades ago, when Iraq was under sanction and about 500,000 children died, Secretary of State at that time, Madeleine Albright, was asked what she thought of that. She said that was acceptable to her. 500,000 dead children, dead Iraqi children, was fine. So how many children and others they expect to die as a result of this in Iran isn't known. But diplomacy is not sanctions. It's not trying to destroy someone's economy. If Trump was unhappy with the JCPOA, then if he were a diplomat, he would have contacted the Iranian government officials and said, I would like mm-hmm. to discuss some further aspects to an agreement, not violate the agreement. Why on earth would the government of Iran return to the negotiating table when the U.S. has no credibility? It has shown that it will break agreements at a whim. So there's no point in signing another one because it has no validity. There's no credibility on the United States side.
Now, Riad, the Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says that Tehran will remain committed to the deal as long as the other parties to it remain committed. Sounds logical, doesn't it?
It is, and to date they have remained committed to it, you know, in spite of all the sanctions that have been put on them, all the pressures that have been put on them, they're, you know, they're still very committed to what they did, and everybody, including the IAEA, has come out with a report that says that Iran complies with the JCPOA, and there is nothing in there that can prove that Iran is doing anything otherwise, you know. But still, the IAEA's word is not really important. What is important is what Bibi Netanyahu says. I think Bibi Netanyahu is the Middle East's IAEA. Unfortunately, I'm really sorry to say that, but the truth of the matter is exactly that. That you know, I don't think he would recognize diplomacy even if it hit him on the face. Let's put it that way. It's very simple. Diplomacy is diplomacy. What he is doing is dictatorship. These are two completely and entirely different things. You know, it is okay to go to you know, to South Korea, to the no-fly zone or no-war zone, and mm-hmm. shake hands with Kim Jong-un, who, by the way, is a dictator. But, you know, having a democratically elected government to sit down with you, you need to bomb them or you need to put sanctions on them? I'm sorry, but that is not diplomacy. You mm-hmm. know, that is just pure dictatorship. That is, I wouldn't even call it dictatorship. That is bullying in very simple terms. And that
Riaz,
bullying
let's
has
also
to
not
stop.
Forget the U.S. aircraft carrier that's deployed to the Persian Gulf. B-2 bombers and all
bullying.
That.
Exactly.
This is diplomacy.
This is not diplomacy. Diplomacy doesn't even come near that. I don't think the word diplomacy mm-hmm. is anywhere or in any sentence of what they're doing. This is pure and simple bullying. And now we come to know that, you know, the Saudi Arabia and Israel are going to basically have an area where you know, basically they're preparing that if it comes to war, then they can fly from there. That's basically what it is. But they're not going to say it. They're just going to say that they're going to conduct war exercises over there. Mm-hmm. But we all know that, you know, this is just a facade. We've known them. Nothing they have said so far has actually proven to be true. Everything has, you know, everything is spoken in a language that only they can understand. But, you know, knowing the media now and knowing social media, we find out a lot more than they actually think we do. And this is where it's heading. And, you know, so basically he's trying to bully Iran into coming to the negotiating table while it's on its knees. And I don't think that is ever going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, Robert, under the nuclear deal, Iran should not hold a stockpile of more than 300 kilos of uranium. But the fact is that even if Iran wants to export this surplus amount, then U.S. sanctions won't allow that. So what's Iran supposed to do then?
Right. Iran cannot win in because of the U.S.'s view. It can't enrich its uranium because that's a violation. It can't trade with other countries because of the sanctions. So the U.S. and Donald Trump especially and his advisors want to put Iran in a position that they can then, the United States, can have some excuse for starting a war with Iran. That will be a disaster throughout the Middle East and much of the rest of the world too, and I hope it doesn't happen. But they are trying to put Iran in a no-win situation. The Iranian people have been have dealt with U.S. sanctions and U.S. oppression for decades. They're not going to give in to this current round of bullying, and they're going to be put into a position where the U.S. is going to have any justification whatsoever to start a war. That doesn't mean the U.S. won't start a war, but there will be no even fake justification for doing so that the U.S. public and much of the world will accept. Benjamin Netanyahu will accept it, certainly, but no one else.
Now, Riyadh, Iran has not withdrawn from the JCPOA, unlike the U.S. That did 13 months ago. Now, yet Tehran is scaling down its commitments on the basis of paragraphs 26 and 36 of the nuclear agreement, citing the other side's inaction to make good on their promises and commitments within the deal. Now it's the European side of the deal who should act upon their commitments within the deal if they are really intent on saving it, right?
Absolutely, absolutely, 100%. Your guest said, this is absolutely true. You know, paragraph 26 and 36 is exactly that, you know, it gives Iran the kickstart it wants to do what it needs to do because of the inaction. Now, if these countries that are so concerned, the UK, France, and Germany are so concerned, they should be able to stand up to the US and say, okay, you know what, you're not in this deal, you don't play part in it, so can you please, can you please just go away so we can deal with this peacefully, and you need to lift these sanctions so that this country can start trading, because you are putting sanctions on a country you pulled out of the agreement long time ago. What are you putting sanctions for? You know, they have to have the spine to stand up and say that. Unfortunately, they lack that spine.
Mm-hmm. And let me also ask Robert's opinion about this. Is the European side able to make good on their promises as stipulated in the JCPOA?
They're able to. As was mentioned, they need to just stand up to the U.S. and say, okay, you're not part of this anymore. You've chosen to withdraw from it. Fine, that's your business. But don't tell us what we can and can't do. And that's exactly what Trump has done by telling those other countries that they will be sanctioned if they trade with Iran. They need to stand up. But as was said, they don't have the spine, they don't have the backbone, they won't stand up to the United States. Now, if they did, the United States, like most boys, would probably back down, because those sanctions against those countries would also impact the United States. And that would hurt Trump's base, which he doesn't want to do above all else. But those countries, England, France, and Germany, are simply too, their leaders are too weak to do this. And so they simply follow along with what the United States wants, at least to an extent.
So Riyadh, what do you think? Is it a matter of inability or unwillingness on the part of Europe?
No, it is a matter of being scared. You know, it is a matter of being scared that we don't have enough power on our own to stand up to this. So we're just going to sit down and listen and see how this plays out. Now, the other thing that they can very well play on, very, very well, is that the figures that came out from the Ministry of Commerce or Department of Trade today say that the United States has the largest trade deficit it has ever had, and that is down 8%.
Mm-hmm.
8%. Now, when you put tariffs on everybody and sanctions on everybody, you don't expect to make a profit. You are definitely going to go down. That actually is going to go in the red column. Somebody needs to stand up and show them the real picture, that if you keep on doing what you're doing, 8% is nothing. You're going to end up at 18%, and you're probably going to lose the election as well.
That's no problem. He's making America great again.
Yeah, well, you know, we can see how great it is becoming. But the nucleus of the matter is that this needs to be resolved, and it needs to be resolved peacefully. And since Iran is a sovereign country, they have not. I don't see, or I don't think, at any given time there's ever been a terrorist who was named, and we have heard that he was Iranian. No. I actually think 40% of the Iranians work for NASA, you know, and that is how it is. If they can work for NASA, they can work for the Iranian government as well, and it's not going to be very long, you know, until Iran becomes a nuclear power. Then what? You know, I think Bibi Netanyahu is going to have babies if that happens. So it is time to clamp them down and just tell them, show them the real picture. The problem is, like your guest said, nobody wants to stand up to them. The spinal cord, they miss that spinal cord just like the United Nations does. And somebody needs to stand up and say, okay, enough is enough. You're not part of this deal. So please, can you stand aside so we can do what we need to do to trade with Iran? Okay. End of story.
Okay, I've got one last question for both of you. Please answer me briefly. Robert, Iran is saying it's not going to wage a war against any country, as it's never done before, nor is it going to produce nuclear bombs. You know, Iran's leader also stressed that by issuing an edict, disbanding, as the leader says. So what is it that the Trump administration is planning to do by its sanctions and so-called maximum pressure campaign? Why does he still insist on scrapping this deal and negotiating another one?
It's simply because of Iran's power and influence in the Middle East. Iran has assisted its allies and continues to do so, has other powerful allies such as Russia, and it is a threat or a competitor to Israel regarding power and influence. Israel, of course, an apartheid, brutal, occupying nation. Iran is not. I have visited Iran a couple of years ago. I enjoyed my time there very much. I would love to go back. But Trump does not want to allow any other country other than Israel to have any power and influence in the Middle East, and Iran definitely does, and its power and influence are growing, and he can't allow that to happen.
So Riyadh, let's have your comments in 30 seconds, please.
Well, I think your guest is absolutely right. The number one thing is that the amount of power that Iran yields in the Middle East with its allies is something that is very unnerving for Israel, which supposedly is the United States police in the Middle East. Number two is that the Strait of Hormuz is a big sticking point, because that monarchy of Saudi Arabia would actually crumble if the Strait of Hormuz was actually blocked, and so they are very scared that taking any kind of action, it will be very easy for Iran to block that. And number three, remember that Israel is keeping a gun on Donald Trump's shoulder to be able to shoot at Iran. And that is wrong. Somebody needs to show him a clear picture.
Okay. Now, on that note, we come to the end of this program. Let me thank our guests, Robert Fantina, author, activist, and journalist, who joined us from Kitchener, and also Riyadh Karim, director of the Veritas Center for Strategic Studies from London. Thank you for watching this program. We'll see you next time.